Ailey's very quickly become my go-to deck if I want to punish the table.
That's lovely.
Yeah, everyone needs one of those.
Why would you want to punish the table, though?
Oh, you're so green, Phil. Nate should be able to answer that question better than me. Nate likes to punish the table.
What?
You like to punish people who have got too big for their boots, don't you?
Sure.
I don't think Nate wants to punish people. I think Nate simply tries to suppress anybody.
Yeah.
Because it's not a punishment thing. It's a, this impedes my ability to win thing.
Oh, maybe it's a punishment thing for me then. Maybe it's an English thing. Punish me, Mama. Punish me.
With less editing to make it happen, I mean. You know what I mean?
You know what I mean?
You know what sure.
Hey, you know what the f*** I mean?
sorry, Consuela.
Consuela Bin Laden.
Hey, I can't even do Trump. I haven't tried. I'm not about to.
You see, it's like that, isn't it? He sort of pauses before everything, like everything he's about to say is deeply profound, yet at the same time obnoxious.
We're going to build a wall. That was too thuggish. I'm not even going to try right now.
He's actually kind of high-pitched and nasal.
He's quite nasal, Trumpy.
Is he?
You gotta kill their families. That's the only thing they understand. I'm going a bit too Joey Tribbiani now.
It's easy, isn't it? Because he's talking like some kind of street thug.
But he did spend some time growing up in... Was he from the Bronx? So it's like, I know he's rich and stuff, but...
There's some wealthy places in the Bronx.
Yeah, but he's from that neck of the woods. Anyway...
Yeah. All right. So,
welcome to the Commander and Trump special.
You know, people have been asking us to do a political show.
Which?
I'm Nate Burgess.
I'm Phil DeLuca.
And I'm Sean Watson.
Hey, you started.
I've just realized Donald Trump, if he was a commander, he would be. What commander is inexplicably played by tons of people? Yeah, is pretty universally despised. He's Narset.
Oh, no.
At it, you go, oh, that's just dumb.
Narset is far too intellectual.
You're saying Trump is an enlightened master?
Some people believe he is.
He's much more of a Rurik Thar. And instead of spells, it's intellectual comments.
You still got to miss out on the inexplicably popular bit. So maybe Rafik of the Many represents the common man. Everyone hates him, but for some reason, everyone plays with him.
No, he's Aloro. He sits back on his chair, and no matter how much you attack him, he still gets stronger.
And he does look slightly ageless, and by that I mean covered in plastic surgery.
And we are Commanderin.
Mandarin.
That may be the best intro we've ever done. Thanks for listening, everybody. We're going to put a spotlight on community issues, but never, ever talk about three banned topics. Yes, we will never talk about religion.
British politics. Never,
especially politics. Apparently British politics, right. Or Hearthstone. Remember to head over to join our Patreon community at patreon.com/commanderandmtg. By donating as little as a buck a show, you'll help us shape the shows like we did for the Jason Ault episodes and this very episode. Mm. And if you really don't like the way we pronounce Patreon, well, donate and maybe we'll change. This week, we have a wonderful show lined up for you. That comes from somebody tweeting at us about mispronouncing Patreon as Patreon instead of as Patreon.
Patreon.
Yeah, we should say Patreon.
I think if you're a $10 Patreon subscriber, each week you can choose a word or how we pronounce it. Not just Patreon, any word. we'll pick the best one.
Karametra.
God. Karametra. Mm. There's a ring to that.
Isn't that right? Pi Hill Delica.
Please, I prefer Pi Hill. despite all signals, this week we have a wonderful show lined up for you. We are going to talk about your questions, comments, and tips. But first, we want to talk about what we've been playing or playtesting. Nate, why don't you start us off?
All right, so I unlocked some personal achievements with Grimgrin. It just happened to be Grimgrin. I cast a kicked rite of replication on an opponent's massacre worm. So, 10 points there. And I also won a 4-hour game of ad hoc arch enemy with Haleva.
Were you the arch enemy?
I turned out to be the arch enemy, yeah.
Wow.
And I killed two of my opponents by milling them out, and it's not a mill deck.
Nice.
Oh, how many times did you cast her?
Well, if you cast her 6 times, that's 4 plus 6 plus 8 plus 10 plus 12 plus 14. That's 54 cards exiled from every library. And then denying wind on top of that helps a little bit.
Have you thought about putting in, I know you don't have many creatures, but Oblivion Sower into that deck?
No.
Because then you whip everyone's lands that you've been exiling back into play.
Yeah, but you really can't have many creatures in that deck at all.
I'm one, which essentially isn't a creature spell. It's a massive ramp spell. I would put it in anyway.
Hmm.
It's uncastable, though, if you exile it with Haleva.
Meh. So's a swamp.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Very true. These are wise words, Sean.
So's a soul ring. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Hey, I got to playtest two decks that I have been looking forward to. The first was Hazazon Tamar, and it exceeded expectations. The trick is, of course, never to have Hazazon Tamar on the battlefield longer than is necessary to trigger his Sand Warriors coming in. Early on, it only produces a few Sand Warriors, 7 or so. And then after that, it produces many, many Sand Warriors. And with other cards that bring in little guys, and I'll post the deck list at some point, it gets out of control really fast. It's basically, you got to have a board wipe every turn, otherwise I'm going to be throwing little guys at you like peas or pellets, just flinging them, and they go to town. I like Hazazon Tamar's flavor because he's kind of like, hey guys, let's go to this town and ransack it, and then, I got to go guys, I'll leave you a note, and then they show up. So it's a party Hazazon Tamar throws, but is never present for. And then the other deck is Searchless Marath, and I got to play that, and I basically, it didn't draw any lands, so I couldn't really play it. And that would have happened without, even if I had all of the search cards in it. But the interesting thing is how reliant I was on tutoring, and this includes all the land ramp, everything like that. I pulled all those cards because I wanted to see if I could make it work with just card draw. I had 22 cards that had the word search on it.
Yeah, but tutoring for stuff is something you don't really do a lot of, isn't it, Phil?
No, although I had Idyllic Tutor and Enlightened Tutor in there to pull, you know, some things that I really needed. Mm. I think I left Sterling Grove in because I don't think I've ever tutored for it. And if I tutor for it, it's because you made me do it. And I left a certain card in there that you would pick on me for, but I've never used its search function, and there is a clean version of this card, so I used it. We are, of course, talking about Brutalizer Exarch.
I was about to say, listeners, guess which Phyrexian card Phil is using.
It's clean. It's not a Phyrexian card.
What set was it reprinted in without Walmart?
Plain Chase.
Oh, right, okay. That makes it fine then, doesn't it?
It does. Which, absolutely
which plane
does.
Were you chasing there? Was it Phyrexia? Oh no, it's probably Mirrodin, wasn't it? Yeah.
I don't recall. Yeah. All I know is the Brutalizer Exarch made it to my plane, so I'm using it. And it's
and
clean.
It's a Phyrexian creature.
I'm sorry?
It's a Phyrexian creature with a different watermark.
No, there's no watermark on it, and it's not a Phyrexian creature. It's just a poor misunderstood Brutalizer Exarch.
What creature type is Brutalizer Exarch?
Oh, it's not important, guys.
So, I've been continuing my test to make Vela the Nightclad a good deck. I've had to make it faster because her 6 EMC is quite harsh. And she only needs to die once or twice to really make her suck. But the fun thing I had this week was I cast Thran Lens quite early in the game. And, it, you know, Thran Lens is 2 for an artifact that says all permanents are colorless.
And that's beautiful.
Yeah, well, they all went, oh, that's rubbish. Why is that in there? Blah, harumph, 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 harumph. By about halfway through the game, someone took the time to disenchant the Thran Lens when I already had a Sword of Feast and Famine on the table. And they thought the Thran Lens was a bigger threat, because Thran Lens in a Vela deck reads, all of your creatures are unblockable.
Right.
Because she gives all your creatures Intimidate, which means you can only be blocked by a creature that shares your color. And if you're all colorless, no one shares your color.
Can artifact creatures block them?
Artifact creatures can, because Intimidate specifically says so. But artifact isn't a color, because you can have colored artifacts. And colorless is also not a color. So Thran Lens says your creatures can only be blocked by artifact creatures, essentially, in the Vela deck. So yeah, it's been great. It's one of them cards which on surface is not grand, but in the right deck becomes an absolute star of the deck. To use a Commander's Brew term.
Hmm.
Hey guys, it's a star of the deck, eh? There's my Canadian accent for you.
Oh, that was brilliant.
It's a boot time. Not going to continue with that one. Anyway.
Please. Please don't.
I apologize for Sean's Canadian accent. There, that's my Canadian accent. By apologizing.
But you know what? Neither me nor the Canadian listeners will apologize for our socialized healthcare. Ha 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 ha. Anyway.
What? Hello, non sequitur.
Politics. Anyway, yeah, so I've just been doing that. I am looking for a bit of inspiration for something to play, though. I'm running out of Dimir commanders really fast.
Well, you should click random on EDH Rec.
I could do that right now.
Yeah.
My next commander will be... da, 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 da.
Mono green, go!
Fumiko the Lowblood. Oh, God.
Oh, she's good.
Okay, I can do mono red. I'm going to build that. Okay. Thanks, EDH Rec.
Well, this week we also have a very special segment. This is the segment where we talk about a card that either warps the meta you're playing in because everybody uses it and sees it frequently and needs to control it, or the game you're playing where people focus on doing nothing but destroying it, grabbing it, stealing it, exiling it, whatever it takes to gain control of and or remove it. And we call that segment the Watch List.
The Watch List.
Dun, dun, dun. yes. And this week, we are doing Sundial of the Infinite.
What? That's a harmless card.
Yeah. Nate, you want to read it?
Sundial of the Infinite. 2 artifact. Pay 1 and tap. End the turn. Activate this ability only during your turn. So, exile all spells and abilities on the stack. Discard down to your maximum hand size. Damage wears off, and this turn and until end of turn effects end.
This one is on the watch list because I think it is the question that has recurred the most in our deck testing group. We've actually had it come up 4 times in the last 6 months because the asker isn't quite sure what happens when the turn ends. For example, the key concern is about abilities that end at the end of the turn, either because it says until the end of the turn, or it's a triggered ability that says at the end of the turn. And so until end of turn, it's not a triggered ability, and by using the sundial on your turn, you can run from it, but you can't actually hide from the expiration. These are cards like Giant Growth, Act of Betrayal, Rune's Exile ability, Threaten, and so on. And it's important to remember that the effect will end at the very next end step. And so that means if you do it on your turn, let's say you cast a giant growth and you're like, ha ha ha, now my creature's forever going to have +3/+3, activate Sundial. Well, that's great. It just means it ends at the end of the next turn. It's unavoidable, and that means that it will carry through your opponent's turn, but it stops.
Yeah, it's a confusing card.
It is. It's a confusing card. It's not easy. And then we have the triggers that say at the end of the turn, do this. That's the definition of a triggered ability. And so those things go on the stack. Now, if you want those things to last forever or never affect you, you wait for them to go on the stack. All of the triggers at the end of the turn go on the stack. Then you activate Sundial in response. That exiles everything on the stack. So the effect came on. It tried to execute, but it couldn't because now it's gone. And now it stays forever.
Mm.
Yeah, it's brutal. I've considered trying to use this several times before. So how does this help you if you're the owner of the Sundial? Again, you can extend effects that last until the end of the turn into your next opponent's turn. They're not forever, but they last until the end of your next opponent's turn. And again, Giant Growth, which gives you +3/+3 until the end of the turn. Active Betrayal, which gives you control of a creature until the end of the turn, or Rune's Exile ability, which sends a creature away until the end of the turn. Those abilities last until the end of your opponent's turn. It's pretty awesome if you're down to one opponent, because then you can effectively make these effects last, not forever, but pretty close. And then there are triggered effects that make you sad. And now they don't. You get to keep your creatures if there is an Archfiend of Depravity out. You get to keep your shiny tokens from Mimic Vat, Felden of the Third Path. Sean, you have a neat use as well.
Yeah, Sundial of the Infinite is one of the only legitimate ways you can use Phage the Untouchable as your commander.
Oh.
So Phage, when you cast her, she has a triggered ability that checks to see if you've cast her from your hand. And if you haven't, you lose the game. So you have to cast her from your command zone, then Sundial, which exiles her triggered ability off the stack.
Right.
So Sundial and the other card that does it is Time Stop, but that's blue, so you can't use it in that deck. So Sundial's the only way you can use Phage as your commander.
There's other ways.
Yeah, there are other ways. Nate has a Phage deck that does that.
How else do you get Phage in?
Well, there's the card that suppresses Enter the Battlefield effects.
Torpor Orb.
There you go.
Command Beacon.
What's the Griffin?
Yeah, but you can't put Hushwing Griff in your own deck because it's a mono black deck, Phil.
No, it assumes that you've got white in there.
Yeah, but then she's not your commander, is she?
No, that's a good point. Sorry, I don't know what I was thinking. My brain just shut off.
That's all right. You can put her in your deck. You can cast her from your hand. It's casting her from the command zone that makes her tricky. But she's a pretty good commander. But this is the... if you're playing against the Phage as a commander deck and you can somehow exile the Sundial, sad times for the Phage player.
Mm-hmm. Another way this can help you is you can neutralize your opponent's spells and abilities if they cast them on your turn. So someone swords to plowshares your creature? Nope. No thanks. Is there an enemy rune targeting your critter?
Oh,
no.
Wait. You can't... go ahead. Never mind.
See what we mean, listeners? Sundial makes people go, hang on, what?
Yeah.
Does that... No, it doesn't work. Okay, carry on. That'll happen a lot if you're playing with Sundial.
And so the way this works is somebody targets one of your things or a thing you want to remain out, let's say, and it's your turn, you just activate the Sundial and it exiles that spell or ability. It's pretty convenient. It's sort of a one-use, your-turn-only counter spell. It's a bad way to use it, but you could do it.
Yeah, if it keeps your Avacyn alive, it's probably worth it.
Yeah, because they're unlikely to have the follow-up path to exile then, right?
I mean, if they're casting it, if they know you've got Sundial in play and they're casting their Swords to Plowshares during your turn, then it's their own stupid fault because you can't activate the Sundial in someone else's turn. So
yeah. I've seen it used to defend another player's thing, where at the end of my turn, let's say somebody swords to plowshares one of your... Let's say Nate swords to plowshares your creature in the unlikely event that Nate is playing a white deck, Sean. I could activate Sundial and then the STP doesn't go off.
Yes. STP, because the phrase swords to plowshares is just too hard to say.
All the cool kids call it STP.
And all the Stone Temple Pilots fans as well.
Yeah.
It's only three syllables.
Yeah.
Oh, if you have a Platinum Angel out already, then you can cast Phage.
Yes, because you can't lose the game. There you go.
Oh, so much evil. And so how does this hurt you? It's essentially the inverse of that. If your opponent has, let's call it an unfriendly sundial, then they can activate it in response to your instance or abilities. And again, you know, if they have end of turn triggers that are coming at the end of their turn, they can always negate those. So you sort of have to watch out for it. And remember, I've seen this mistake almost every time I've seen sundial played. Your sundial cannot be used on your opponent's turn.
Mm.
It's only on your turn, only on the controller's turn. So if you have some way to steal it, and I recommend you do, remember it can only work on your turn. Not really a bannable card, but it is one that I've seen control revolve around. You guys have any funny stories about Sundial, or do we cover it there?
Not funny. It's very similar to Time Stop, which is a blue instant that does the same thing.
Yeah.
But you can cast it outside your turn, so that's got more blowout potential because you can use it during your opponent's turns to really mess with them.
Mm-hmm.
Or it'll win you the game because it essentially says you take an extra turn. I don't know, it's definitely not ban-worthy, but I think it's the kind of card that's going to make you sharpen up on your rules and definitions.
Absolutely. So you should be the one at the table, good listener, who is able to define and describe how Sundial works. And just remember, if it goes on the stack and then you activate Sundial, it's gone. And if it is an until end of turn effect, it lasts until the end of the next turn that has an end step. It's kind of fun, though, if everybody has a Sundial of the Infinite out.
Oh, God. And if you're playing with Sundial, make sure you know your rules for how the turn ends. And
yes,
please don't be that guy that's got it wrong. We've all been that guy occasionally where we've misunderstood a rule. But if you're using a card that you know is tricky sort of interactions with the table, just know it. Be confident that you know it as well.
Ain't nothing more annoying than somebody who plays a Sundial and doesn't know how it works.
Oh, I don't know. It's up there, but I think there's a few other things.
Agreed. Yeah, that is very true.
People tutoring at the beginning of their turn and not knowing what they're looking for. So,
oh yeah,
watching someone else fiddle with their deck before you all just wait. That's more annoying.
Yep, Sensei's Divining Top. Somebody who waits until the end of their last opponent's turn to activate it and to begin the search, and then dawdles over all three cards, and it's like, oh, really?
Nothing more annoying? Challenge accepted.
Hang on, we're forgetting the king of annoying, which is somebody who plays with 1,000 Karametra triggers and also has abundance in play at the same time, and just stacks the triggers endlessly and takes forever. I don't know who
can. Oh, well, Karametra triggers don't trigger abundance. It's the ancillary draw effects that come from the enchantresses in play when you cast an enchantment creature.
Want to chew on my own knuckles.
And then all it is not land. Hey, that's not a land. Or not land. That's a land. Not land. That's a land. Still not land. Oh, that's a land.
I cast a tunnel vision on someone the other day naming Sol Ring, because it's a fairly fair bet that's in their deck. And do you know what? They didn't have a Sol Ring in their deck. They knew they didn't have a Sol Ring in their deck, but rather than tell us, they flipped each of their cards one by one. And it was a friend.
Hey, you cast the tunnel vision.
I would have believed him if he'd said, I don't have a Sol Ring.
Wow, that's great. Was that in paper?
Yeah.
Well, that's the penalty you pay for playing Tunnel Vision.
Was it suspenseful and dramatic?
It was, actually. I will give it that. It was quite exciting when he got to his last card. And we're like, here comes the Sol Ring. No. I've only lived the dream of randomly casting a Tunnel Vision for Sol Ring and it being the bottom card once. I think I did it to Nick Jaragoski.
Wow.
Yeah, he's just like,
Yeah, you get to those last 10 cards and you know you're doomed no matter what.
Yep.
Do you cast it against Grenzo?
Do I cast against... Well, if someone's putting...
Oh, you should.
I don't run Hinder or any of the other Tuck cards in the deck to make it super mean. But if someone else flips something to the bottom of their library, I'll Tunnel Vision for it to punish them.
Yeah, you will.
Not my best tunnel vision story, though.
There's that punish word again.
We spoke about that before the show started, Phil.
So, all right, our main topic this week is not, in fact, punishment. We're going to go through the email and Facebook messages you've sent us over the last, 6 months or so. Mm. Actually, it's less than that because we just did a mailbag on episode 38, I believe. So the amount of mail we've been receiving and messages on Facebook we've been receiving has increased dramatically. So it's kind of time to do this. We're going to start with mail sent to us by our patrons. So thank you very much, patrons, for supporting us. And we want to make sure that we answer some of your questions. So, Sean, why don't you take this first one?
Okay, well, bearing in mind Nate's already discussed this card, and I'm using Vela, which abuses this card. This is a good way to kick us off. We're going to call this one Rite of Ridiculous Splication. Say that three times backwards whilst drunk. Hey, guys. I'm a long-time listener and a recent patron. The Big Man of Blue episode 43, listeners, B, was a lot of fun to listen to. As usual, I wanted to share a story about Rite of Replication. It's kind of long, but I think you'll enjoy it. Most memorable time I resolved it with Kicker was in the 2012 Jewels of the Planeswalkers game. It was against a computer, but still. Aw, poor computer.
Poor computer.
Yeah, so he says, I was playing blue-green ramp against mono-black vampires.
Yeah.
There was a lot of back and forth, but not having any removal made it really tough to stop any flying vampires from coming over my way. My life total was getting low, and my opponent had been gaining a ton of life from some early vampire nighthawks, amongst other things. It looked grim, but then it was looking up. I drew and cast Kozlek, Butcher of Truth. That's just mean, isn't it? I drew four lands, but hey, I've got a 12-12 on the table. You forgot Annihilator 4 there as well. But yes, you do have a 12-12. So, of course, he cast...
Minor point.
Yeah, you know, what's Annihilator 4 between friends? So, of course, he cast Captivating Vampire and immediately steals it. That's tap five untapped vampires you control to take control of a creature on the table. And then it happened.
You know that a little too well.
I used to play Olivia, didn't I? And then it happened. I top decked the right replication, targeting Captivating Vampire, and kicked it. I now have five vampires, exactly as if I could steal something. And they all give each other +4/+4. Yay! I immediately stole his Captivating Vampire, threw Saprolings in front of Kozlek for a turn, and then stole the Eldrazi Giant right back the next turn. The tables had turned. I presume you had the Saprolings were also soaking up the Annihilator triggers. New goal, make the poor computer suffer before he dies. Besides, the AI certainly won't accuse me of playing like a tool. The next few turns were attack with Kozlek, four lands get sacrificed, and a vampire chump blocks. Optionally, I play a Simic Sky Swallower, which is a great card. The turn before I attack for lethal, the attached photo shows us a photo of the board state. Yeah, it's pretty mean.
Yeah, he's got 5/7/7 Captivating Vampires. He's got Kozlek and a bunch of other creatures.
This was a few years ago, but I still very much remember how crazy Rite of Replication was in this game. Thanks for the great show. Keep up the good work. Cheers, Matt Hoffman.
Yeah, he even took a picture of it.
He did.
Yeah.
He did. He must have been very proud of his death. I noticed that that card in his graveyard is Cultivate, though. Boo! Boo!
Yeah.
Yeah, but I wonder if the AI was programmed to know what to tutor for.
You just have to sit there for 20 minutes while the AI is going, maybe. Oh, I don't know. Oh, that's a good option. Yeah, Rite of Replication is a crazy, crazy bonkers card. I think it should be in everyone's staple binder for blue.
Oh, yeah.
I'm trying to think. Rite of Replication for five Consecrated Sphinxes, that's probably been the funniest one. Go on.
Yeah, funny. Funny, haha.
Draw a card, I dare you.
Oh, taking your turn, are you?
Yeah, I'm going to draw 10. Woohoo! Yeah. Cheers, Matt. Good story. That sounded way more sarcastic than it meant to be. Thank you for your email, Matt.
Yeah, no, that's a great story.
All right, the next email. Rakdos Lord of Nothing.
What?
What? Guys, you probably get a million emails like this. So no worries if you can't do anything. Or you take one look and decide it's beyond help. And here's a deck list to Rakdos Lord of Riots. It's slow. I mean, I can be sitting there on turn 6 with nothing in play and getting smashed in the face slow. My style is probably more dirty control. Marin is a favorite. So I have half a mind to make Rakdos into some sort of chaos control shell with a finisher once it's safe to come out and party. Quite how I do this, I'm not sure yet. Anyway, love the cast. Keeps me laughing and informed. Neil Booth at Nedrock.
Neil, we apologize in case that isn't your accent.
I presume Neil is a surfer dude.
Nedrock.
Now, you actually already responded to him in email. It was an awesome response, so we had to go over it here.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah.
Okay. Here's what I wrote back. My first impressions. Your deck looks like a demon tribal deck in Rakdos colors, but not a deck built around Rakdos Riots. Like, for example, like comparing it to my Rakdos Riots deck and my Shadowborn Apostles decks, his deck had more in common with the Shadowborn Apostles deck because of the set of demons, the mono black demons that he had. Now, for any commander that has an ability built around casting creatures, the deck should have a higher number of creatures than average decks. And this goes for Veil of the Nightclad, too. For example, the deck he sent had 34 creatures. Mine has 39. Well, it had 39 at the time, and that'll probably go higher, and it did. The casting costs of the creatures you do have aren't geared toward your commander's ability of having your creatures cost one colorless less for each amount of damage that your opponents have taken that turn.
Oh, so brutal.
So even if you've done plenty of damage, with a creature base you have, you'll still have to pay at least 2 to 4 mana per creature after Rakdos's discount. So, on the other hand, my deck had 17 creatures with no colored mana pips, meaning that all of them can eventually be cast for free after a good mass burn. And the deck you sent had 4. So another way to look at it, counting all of your 34 creatures, there are 59 total colored mana pips. So it's like looking at the devotion over all your creatures. Counting all of my 39 creatures, there are 30 total colored mana pips.
Hmm.
And I've since adjusted that to 43 creatures and 21 total colored mana pips.
Ooh.
So
that's
more
not fair.
Creatures... Well, what do you mean it's not fair? I'm just doing what the guy's doing. So if you have more creatures and you're using fewer colored mana pips, that means that Rakdos Riots discount works better. And I think the creature base mana profile was the primary issue with that deck. So try to solve that first. Now, burn spells. I like the burn spells that you had, but more of your non-creature spells should be burned. I had 11 instants and sorceries, and Vandal Blast is the only one that cannot affect player life totals. And 3 out of the 6 enchantments that I had can hurt players, and that's probably too low, and I actually took a bunch of them out. If you're going to use removal spells, find removal spells that also damage players. Breath of Daragaz is okay. Killing Wave, Rakdos Charm, and Kolaghan's Command, they all have potential. Instead of something like Blasphemous Act, try Inferno, or Chandra's Fury, or Chandra's Ignition, or Incite Rebellion. So with Rakdos, both the guild and the commander, think more offensively. Rakdos should be killing opponent creatures by attacking with more and larger creatures that must be blocked. So things like Black Sun Zenith, Hero's Downfall, Terminate, yes, Blasphemous Act as well, those are all defensive cards that Rakdos only plays when losing. He sneers at these cards because they do not help him with his primary goals of burning faces and unleashing huge, trampling, flying, annihilating abominations in battle. Games tend to either end quickly with Rakdos as the winner, or the opposite of that. Hope that helps, Mr. Plorg.
The way you describe that, it's like the end of the world.
Well, it's the end of the game.
Yeah, it really is. Unleashing huge, trampling, flying, annihilating abominations in battle. Good Lord. What I realized we had to share with the community was your analysis of the pips. That is an excellent way to look at Rakdos or Riots.
Yeah, it's exactly that reason why I don't have Grey Merchant of Asphodel or Fanatic of Mogus in Rakdos, because they're not going to get many pips. The deck is designed not to have that kind of devotion.
Wow. Well, I've played against Rakdos or Riots, and it's brutal.
Yeah, you just have to keep the man himself off the table.
Yeah.
And then it slows down to a bit of a grind.
Yeah, if you can keep Rakdos off the table, you have a fighting chance, but the clock is ticking anyway, and so he's just building up mana until he can actually cast these creatures. The old-fashioned way.
Yeah, if you don't get Rakdos on the table, then eventually he's going to put his entire handful of Eldrazi on the table before combat with haste.
Yeah.
Oof. Excellent, and thank you very much, Neil, for writing to us and giving Nate the opportunity to share that with the community. Awesome. Now, Sean, you've dabbled a bit in Pauper, right?
I have, yeah. Well, I'll read the email first. So, hey, Commander in Ears. Love the show. Insert additional praise here until someone starts to feel comfortable. Phil is not only a handsome man, but a wise one as well, and his beard looks like it could have birds nesting in it. Rare ones. American bald eagles.
Oh, please, please, Sean. Flattery will get you everywhere.
Do you feel uncomfortable yet?
I started uncomfortable, yes.
So, what are you guys' thoughts on Pauper EDH? And are there other commander formats you enjoy in which card choice is restricted in some unusual way? Thanks, Brandon Graisley. Grassley? Graisley.
I've been pronouncing it Grassley.
Okay, I'm going to go Graisley. And okay. Nate, you're...
Grassley.
Grassley. So I have played a bit of Pauper EDH. Those that don't know, you can have any uncommon creature as your commander. It doesn't have to be legendary, just any uncommon creature. And the rest of your deck has to be built with commons. The problem we had, we played in a six-player pod. We sat down. And four people had Ascended Lawmage. We were like, okay, so Ascended Lawmage is a 3-2 creature with flying and hexproof. And it's in white and blue. And the rest of it was just a control shell and cheap white auras to go and destroy it. And because the ability to remove a creature with hexproof really only comes in uncommon and rare, it becomes impossible to kill the commander. So we tried a ban on that card, and then several people turned up with Skyward Eye Prophets, which is a 3-3 human wizard, 3 in a bant with vigilance. You can reveal the tap it to reveal the top card of your library. If it's a land card, put it into play. Otherwise, put the card you did into your hand. And every single deck, with the exception of mine, actually, which was Gruul, because I tried to be different on purpose, lols.
You played what?
I played Gruul. It's this weird thing you can try. It's felt wrong, but you know, everyone just had Rhystic Study.
How did you fit Demonic Tutor into that?
Well, Demonic Tutor can't be in the format anyway, Phil, because it's black.
Oh, no. It's uncommon, you mean. It can be in there if it's black.
That's true. You're allowed to play black cards in Pauper. Sorry. So the format feels very solved. And unless you start sort of hard banning things, because as soon as you get a creature with hexproof, being able to remove that creature is insanely difficult, because you're very limited on the number of edict effects. Edict is each opponent sacrifices a creature type effects, named after the card Diabolic Edict, which was target player sacrifices a creature. You're really limited on edict effects, in common. So we had to then say, okay, cards with Hexproof and Shroud are banned. And then we also had to ban Rhystic Study because everyone just played blue and Rhystic Study.
Oh my goodness.
Because it's the most broken common ever printed, I think, for a commander type format. Especially one where you can't play anything beyond common cards. And it just became exercise in who can solve the format quicker with our own applied restriction each week. And we stopped playing. And you said anything where it's budgety. Well, we added up everyone's decks and they were all coming in at about $30. Now, for $20 more, you can play regular Commander.
That's true.
Which our friends at the Commander's Brew will testify to. Just play Commander's Brew decks. So, rules where you can't spend more than $50, including land, on your deck. And for a very limited amount more, you can play some really good Commander on a limited budget. So, I just think it's a pointless format.
Mm.
When for a small investment more, you can play actual Commander.
I had heard that about the format, and you were the first person I knew to actually play it extensively enough to make that determination. So I guess listeners, we love the idea behind Pauper, and we know that it's a rich format, so to speak, format of other formats like, you know, Pauper Modern and so on. So if you have a way to address this problem, or if you have any advice for us, please write to us. Let us know what's going on with your version of Pauper that doesn't result in a solved format like Sean said.
It was a lot better once we banned Hexproof as an ability.
Oh, I'm sure.
Other Commander formats I enjoy. I do like Secret Partners a lot.
Oh, yeah. That's a blast.
Secret Partners is great fun. Nate, have you played Secret Partners before?
Nope.
No, that's not true.
We did.
Yeah, we had a fun game at GPLA.
Yeah.
It adds an extra level to the game, which is fun. And if you're on a time limit and there's five of you playing and you want a quick game, Star Magic's quite good fun. Do you know that one, guys?
Yes, although I don't think I've played that as a commander player.
So listeners that don't know, Star Magic is if there's five of you playing, the two players that would be opposite you if you were sitting in a circle are your opponents, and the two players, one to your left, one to your right, don't count as your opponents, and you win when your two opponents are dead, regardless of what. So there's a lot of politics involved, so you have to sort of make alliances with the guys to your side, but one of your opponents is also the guy, your ally's ally, so it all becomes interesting. And certain spells become slightly less powerful because your people to your sides don't count as your opponent for the purposes of resolving things like Exsanguinate, for example.
Right. And a couple of folks in our patron chat and now our deck testing group have played King Magic, where one person is the king. It's essentially an adaptation of the Resistance card game, the Hidden Roll card game, where one person is the king. An even number of the rest are the king's bodyguards in some way, and an even number of the rest are secretly assassins and or saboteurs and or other people looking to tear the monarchy down, which I realize is an abhorrent concept for you, Sean.
Yeah, come on. Regicide's well out of order.
Leave those kings alone.
What they have done to you.
And that sounds like a fun version. Haven't played that yet, though.
Do you know Emperor?
Emperor is the one where you have two even teams and, let's say, of three, and one person's in the middle.
Three is traditional.
Yeah, so if you have six players, you divide into two teams of three. One person is the Emperor and can support and move creatures to other players. But you can only attack, basically, if you're on the wings of the Emperor or adjacent to an enemy, I should say. And then you can only attack that enemy.
Burn spells. And spells can be directed at the Emperor, but creatures can only attack the person in front of you, essentially.
Right.
Now, that if you someone knows they're playing Emperor that night, that can get sick. So, because they go, well, I've got a burn deck, so I'm just going to pick that every time. So you have to randomize your teams and encourage people to play decks that aren't just going to burn out the opponent's Emperor with, you know, purpose.
Would you suggest that everybody select the deck, not identify their their commander and then randomly select roles and teams?
Correct. Yeah, that's how you do it. Unless you guys, unless the group all agrees to specifically build for Emperor, then it's a totally different ballgame.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, it's good fun, though. Hmm. It makes for a very different way of playing Magic.
And, of course, there's Two-Headed Giant for commander, which is a little bit weird because it's not directly supported as a format. So in the past, when I've played Two-Headed Giant in Commander, we went with 60 life, and essentially everything else was the same. But again, that gets kind of abusive because we play a lot of each opponent cards, and if you're playing with Purphoros in particular, Purphoros just hammers the opponent team. And I've seen that where a certain, let's say, maladjusted individual that I used to play with would consistently play Purphoros in a Two-Headed Giant game.
Yeah, that happened in my paper. We were doing a bit of that game. One person just sort of picked a deck specifically to do that. But I refused to use my, I think it's Sheldred at the time, which was a, one of its big win cons was to exsanguinate out and use like Grey Merchant and stuff. So I would on purpose not choose that. But then we found Two-Headed Commander Giant games were just ending really fast. One side just very quickly took over the board state and just won.
Yeah. But that's fine, isn't it?
It's fine for a bit. It depends what you want out of your games. We actually, you know, a lot of people complain about long Commander games. My paper group kind of enjoys them. As long as people are still doing stuff. As long as it's not long because everyone stopped you playing Magic.
So, like, if everybody's playing Duretti.
Yeah.
The precon in particular.
Everyone's got that one precon, though.
Where everyone is playing that precon, and everyone then takes a 7 to 10 minute turn and does 2 points of damage.
Yeah, that kind of game sucks. But when people are doing big things and wacky, swingy things, it's good fun.
Yes, indeed.
And, of course, there's playing Commander on Cockatrice against random opponents with no Skype running. That's its own form of Magic.
Yes, that's its own format, isn't it?
Oh, God, is it? But, yeah.
But you have Xbox Live training, Sean.
I unplugged the headset from my Xbox Live and PSN network systems because having a 10-year-old American call me homophobic swear words because I killed them seems... Well, it started off fun, but quickly...
It loses its shine.
After the 10th time of someone teabagging me and calling me an effing F, I just had to turn it off.
Huh. Weird.
They needed to punish you.
If they'd done it with wit and charm, that's great. Anyone can insult me they want as long as they're doing it in an amusing way. What?
I made one of those 10-year-olds disconnect once simply by saying his name. His name was HUBBALLA. So Hub Balla was the way he wanted it because, you know, baller's cool. So I just went, Hubballa! Because he was, you know, being that homophobic, racist jerk and immediate disconnect, just pow, gone.
You shouted him out of existence.
I did. It was awesome.
Like a Dovahkiin.
You should try not being American going one of them things. As soon as they pick up that you're not from the good old US of A, oh, blimey, they don't like it.
Hubballa. His name is a killing word.
Yes.
Anyway, that segued into something different. But that's different forms of Magic that we play. And just why it seems appropriate at this point to say modern.
Its own form of killing word.
Phil, you should read one of these emails.
All right. Rith Enchantress. This is from another patron. Hi, everyone. I'm a big fan of the show, and I look forward to your weekly episodes. Thank you. I just listened to your most recent episode on Selesnya tokens, which should give you an idea of when this was written, and towards the end, you mentioned a possible Enchantress theme. Uh-oh, maybe we should do one of these shows, guys. Well, I've recently built a Naya tokens / Enchantress deck centered around Rith the Awakener. Here's the deck list. Deck list provided. I don't think it's quite to the caliber of the decks that you run in your group, as my playgroup is pretty new slash casual. Oh, come on. We are a casual playgroup, Ian. We actually are, with some noteworthy exceptions. However,
Robin.
Ian continues, I think it's an interesting idea and I'd like to share it with you. Let me know what you guys think and if you have any suggestions. I'm already reconsidering taking out Collective Blessing. Thanks so much for listening. You guys rock and I love the show. Ian Mazica. Ian, thank you so much for your support. And this is quite a good deck. I think you have the nucleus of something that is quite powerful. And as Nate knows, I've been considering brewing. I mentioned this on the drive home, or I think from GPLA. I've been considering brewing a Rith the Awakener deck, and maybe I'll do something similar if you don't mind. So my suggestions first start with focus on enchantments. If this is an enchantress deck, focus on the enchantments. You get a tremendous amount of benefit by using cards that care about enchantments, such as anything in those colors with constellation. Consider them carefully. There are a couple that I wouldn't use necessarily, but take a look at those. Also, have you considered Bestow? Bestow is a wonderful mechanic in an enchantress deck because even if you cast it as a creature, it's still an enchantment, and so it can trigger the enchantress effects that you have out. Speaking of enchantresses, the Argothian Enchantress is, generally speaking, a must-include. She's a bit expensive. She's coming out in Eternal Masters, so maybe you can pick one up from there at either a discount or through a lucky pack pull. Also consider Enchantress's Presence, which is a little bit expensive, but it gives you the draw a card ability for just playing the cards that you're ordinarily going to be playing anyway. Also consider, and here's a little secret tech for Enchantresses. Everybody else should tune out at this point if you haven't already. Fists of Ironwood, which in a token-based Enchantress deck is worth its weight. You put it out, it gives you two Saprolings, and of course it's an enchantment, so you get to draw cards off of it. And you put it on Rith so that Rith can do combat damage and Rith can get his or her shtick going. Is Rith a male or female?
I'm going to go with... Let's look at the artwork and decide. I'm going to go with female.
All right. Cast it on her. Other cards you should consider are Intangible Virtue or Always Watching, depending on how heavily you're going into tokens. Obviously, if you're going into tokens, it's Intangible Virtue, and if you're sticking with regular, non-token creatures, no offense to any token creatures listening, Always Watching. And of course, you want your removal to be enchantment based, and you already have Song of the Dryad, so I suggest Oblivion Ring and its ilk. With all of these enchantments, you need more ways to return them from the graveyard because they're going to get destroyed a lot, either through combat or because mean people want to take your enchantments away. I have Silent Sentinel in here, even though he doesn't return enchantments. I just forgot to move him up into the other section. Auramancer, Monk Idealist, Lotus Eye Mystics, Griffin Dreamfinder, although Griffin Dreamfinder is a little bit inefficient. Lotus Eye Mystics gives you the added bonus of rewarding you for playing any non-creature spell. So, hey, enchantments, right? Dowsing Shaman.
Silent Sentinel does return enchantment.
Oh, that's right. Silent Sentinel is... I was thinking of Silent Arbiter. Right, so Silent Sentinel returns it when on the attack. Dowsing Shaman is enchantment returning on a stick. Speaking of which, so is Skull of Orm. These are low-cost options. They're somewhat inefficient, but Skull of Orm is fun because you can always just recur those enchantments to your hand and then recast them if they're inexpensive. And, of course, Dawn to Dusk. One of the problems I think you're going to have is with fixing and ramping your mana because you have almost nothing in there. I think you have one Kodama's Reach. I'm not sure. It's one of those two, Cultivate or Kodama's Reach. But you also should use Rith's Grove, a tri-land named after Rith, all of the appropriate signets if you can, a Soul Ring, of course, Darksteel Ingot for fixing, and then Thought Vessel, because you're going to be drawing a lot of cards and you need to keep them in hand rather than discarding them. Reliquary Tower will help with the latter as well. Now, how do you make room for these? Well, it's going to be tough. You're going to have to cut some of the spells that don't pay off really well. And that includes things like Wolfbriar Elemental, which seems like it's great, but you can only kick it with green mana. And so the question is, especially if you don't have any fixing, are you going to have enough green to kick it? I actually cut Wolfbriar Elemental from my Marath deck, which is pretty token heavy, and it did not make it into Hazazon Tamar. Because again, all that green mana, it's so hard to actually cast it. along the same lines, Chancellor of the Forge, and I'm not actually recommending against it because it's a Phyrexian card, but because it's a triple red card. I don't see how you're ever going to get enough triple red or triple green for it to matter. And Wolfbriar Elemental in particular, if you only kick it once, it's not worth it. You're getting one wolf out of the deal. Hanwer Militia Captain, brand new, but it's slow and it's low impact, and I just don't see this one making it into all but the most dedicated of token decks, and this really isn't a token deck. And even then, I would still be wary of it. Dragonmaster Outcast. It's sweet. I see exactly what it's doing, but it's kind of off theme if you're going with Enchantress, so consider cutting that. I would absolutely cut Godfavored General, because even though it puts enchantment creatures into play, it's slow, it's unlikely to happen, especially more than once, because you have to attack, you have to tap it in order to use it. Because, of course, its ability, Inspired, is activated only on the untap. If you had more ways to tap your own creatures, perhaps. I didn't see any in your deck. Also, Mentor of the Meek. I know, right? White card draw. But you're not bringing into play enough small critters, generally speaking. And usually Mentor of the Meek in a tokens deck is vaporized within moments of it coming onto the battlefield. So I would consider Harmonize unless you are absolutely going token. But if you're going enchantments, then you're not going to be playing a lot of small creatures. And I would cut any of the Guild Gates and any other do-nothing tapped lands that I missed, because Guild Gates are just not as effective as even basic lands. Yes, they fix your mana, and that runs counter to my mana fixing, but in this particular case, I think with enough mana fixing in other ways, such as with Signets, Karu lands, the lands that make you bounce a land when you put them into play, I think you'll be fine. Just drop those Guild Gates. Oh, so Nate has made a note here in the show notes that according to the internet, the novel Plane Shift, Book 2 of the Invasion Cycle, published in 2001 by J. Robert King, refers to Rith as female.
Yeah, guessed it right.
Yeah, good call. You didn't even have to turn her over and push on the backside of her tail.
Oh, no, I wouldn't do that anyway, but yeah. She looks like she'd turn around and eat me.
You've never owned an iguana, have you?
I did own an iguana. I had to get rid of, because every time my now ex-wife had her menstrual cycle, it went nuts and tried to kill her. True story.
Wow, I didn't realize that was an issue.
Nor did I until I had an iguana.
So now we're going to switch to a couple of other pieces of mail before we end the show, and we want to thank all of the patrons for your contributions here and, of course, your continued support and donations. We really, really appreciate what you're doing for us. Thank you. So we had a couple of responses to our mass land destruction show. Sean, you want to take this one?
Okay, so this was the first one we got. As someone who does not run mass land destruction, I still have no problem with it. I also feel it should not be used as a turn 4 play with no win condition on the board. Agreed. I do think it is a reasonable way to protect a win condition, though. It plays a similar role to Counterspell after playing a big creature such as Bloodsteel Colossus. It protects your threats. Thank you for the cast and the entertainment it provides. Oh. Thank you. And that's from Ryan King. I refute that mass land destruction has the same role as Counterspell.
It does kind of work like Counterspell in advance for removal. It
stops everyone else casting any spells ever.
Yeah, and includes removal spells.
But Counterspell stops one effect going off. Counterspell does not stop everyone playing Magic for 4 mana.
Yeah, it's sort of like playing against Robin.
Yeah.
Or for that matter, A.E. Marling.
I've not played A.E. Right, well, first of all, if you're playing Blightsteel and then doing a mass land destruction, You would get to do that once in my meta before everyone just turns and kills you every time you play with that deck.
It is a self-correcting problem, isn't
it? Yeah. Nate, do you remember what happened when you started playing Commander with me and Phil and played Blightsteel Colossus against me?
You took it.
I took it, cloned it, and then beat you both with one each. And Phil just sat there and
brutal.
Said, I'm not even mad at Sean.
That was Nate's fault.
Yeah. And
yep.
Blightsteel Colossus briefly became a thing in my paper meta, and then that person realized that almost everyone in our meta ran bribery. So it just became a question of who could get bribery first, which was normally not the Blightsteel guy, because he can't bribery himself anyway. And it would just get pulled out and kill everyone. You know, I think you're kind of agreeing with our argument in that using it irresponsibly, you say you don't like. So we agree with you there. I think I speak for all three of us there, do I?
Yep.
I think it being a legitimate play to protect a win condition really comes down to what that win condition is. Because, like, let's say you're using a Gisela Blade of Gold Knight deck, and she's your commander.
Mm-hmm.
You wipe the creatures on one turn with a Wrath of God or something, and then you play your Gisela, and then the turn after that you wipe all the land. You're going to win that game, aren't you? Because you're going to deal 10 points of commander damage to one person every turn, and you're only taking half damage back. But that's still, what, 6 turns, presuming that there's already been some commander damage already done in a 3-4 player game? Do you know what I mean? It's, how's that similar to a counterspell? I don't really understand.
It is, again, it's protecting your win con. So okay. You put your win con down and then you protect it. And it's a pretty effective way to protect it. This is actually sort of the definition of the way to play MLD, yeah, Mass Land Destruction Responsibly.
That's not the bit I refute. It's the it being similar to a counterspell. So you play your Blightsteel Colossus Phil, and it's in your... Not that you would do that. They've reprinted it without Phyrexian Watermark.
Okay, yeah, that's fine.
Right? And it's in your mono blue deck, say, right? And I try and Swords to Plowshares it, and you counter my swords, and then someone else goes, I don't know, Path to Exile it, and you don't hold a second counter. Right.
Mm.
Let's imagine you're playing your Blightsteel in your Boros deck. You play your Blightsteel Colossus, and then you destroy all the lands. How is that the same? Like, one is more effective than the other, but one isn't playing Magic and one is playing Magic.
Oh, I would say both are playing Magic. So in this alternate universe where we have a shiny new Blightsteel Colossus with no watermark, and I have, you know, the 15 or 16 mana required to play it, assuming I don't cheat it into
play. Let's say you've got a Quicksilver Amulet. There you go. There's a billion ways to put it into play.
Yeah, yeah. So I have enough mana to do it. I would absolutely play the Blightsteel and then destroy everybody's lands, thereby countering those Swords to Plowshares and Paths to Exiles that haven't been cast yet. And now never will be.
If you cast Blightsteel and I go counter, everyone else at the table goes, yay, we all still get to play Magic. If you cast Blightsteel and then hit destroy all the lands, everyone goes, ugh, I was enjoying that game.
Yeah, it was. And then the anger in my graveyard allows me to remove you, and then the next turn I remove somebody else. Dun, dun, dun.
But it is a self-correcting problem.
It is. It absolutely is. But it is a responsible use of mass land destruction.
It is, but I disagree that it is similar to a counterspell. Strongly.
Nate, what do you think?
Okay, what do you think to the statement, Phil, Nate, that mass land destruction has a similar role into a deck as a counterspell?
In a sense, it does. You have to really squint your eyes and look at it a certain way, but...
Yeah.
Drink a few drinks first.
I mean, fundamentally, you're defending your win con.
Yeah, okay, but in that case, I don't know. What's a creature that exiles another creature? Would removing someone's duplicate if they're using a flicker deck, is that the same as mass land destruction, using that argument?
Well, using a counterspell and using mass land destruction, they both mean that your opponents can't do what they were going to do.
No. Yep. One means one opponent can't do one effect. The other one says every other player can't cast spells. Well, in fact, all players can't cast spells.
Like Glen Alendra, Archmage?
Well, it's a very good, but you can still play creature spells, can't you? And it only stops two effects. And you're comparing a handgun to a bomb, I think. And saying, well, they both kill people.
Well, in Marquesa, she's an automatic.
That's right.
It's a very specific deck that interacts with counters.
Well, no, there are other decks that do that. Basically, you just have to be able to remove that counter or neutralize it.
Yeah, I agree. But I still say you're comparing a handgun to a bomb and saying they're the same thing because they both kill people.
I'm just defending my win con.
Well, I'm comparing an automatic weapon to a bomb.
Okay, fine. I'd still say the bomb's worse.
More effective, you mean, at its job.
It's indiscriminate. I think there's the difference. Phil, I want you to call the police and just tell them about the thoughts you've been having.
Well, I mean, the bottom line is, if I can prevent you from destroying my win con or removing my win con, what is the fundamental difference? In particular, if my win con then smashes your face on the same turn I put it into play.
Because one indiscriminately stops everyone playing Magic, and one...
No, it doesn't stop everyone.
Mass land destruction. Sorry, it doesn't stop you, does it?
That's right.
Well, it does stop you playing Magic. It stops you casting spells, etc. Unless you...
Not with a Boros charm.
That's true. But any scenario, if you go, say, any cards in this situation can be used from the history of Magic, you will find a corner case example where it's just fine. So...
Yay!
So there we go.
Anyway, Phil.
So it's just fine.
If only you had
we will
an email
excerpt
you
that.
Could read about how MLD is okay.
Oh, yeah. So another email defending mass land destruction. Remember, we did ask for this, and these guys have done it.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, we said if you have a sound defense, by all means. And these are sound defenses. So
I think Ryan's email essentially agreed with us. The bit I disagreed with was the bit about count spells. The rest of it, yeah, fine.
Yeah. I mean, it's a responsible use of MLD. Yeah. And so this one is, hey guys, I've been a listener for a while and am a huge fan of the show. Thank you very much. We always appreciate hearing from our listeners. He goes on, it's always an awesome commute when you release a new episode. I just listened to your last episode and thought I would put forth my opinion on mass land destruction. MLD is the strongest win condition for most aggro decks. In a multiplayer format, the importance of speed scales down and aggressive strategies become less viable.
That motorbike agrees.
Except in that case. Dropping the first threat only matters if there is a means of backing it up, and MLD is the strongest option. In a format with infinite combos, strong stack slash lockdown, and so many tutors, I don't really feel bad when some Gisela nukes the board.
Toot toot.
In more competitive playgroups, a strong Kalia deck needs to run MLD because she is staring down Animar, Arkham, and Xur, etc. Similarly, competitive Kalia players should play Iona, sorry, he says, and Avacyn to devastate the board early. It is difficult enough for aggro to win in Commander. I personally enjoy it because if it wins, it is uncommon and allows for more games, which I am a fan of. Essentially, it is a question of how your playgroup and meta like to game. If nobody enjoys playing against it, you may want to reconsider and build a new deck. Absolutely fair, right? But players that consider themselves competitive should not complain about MLD, Sean. Oh, he just wrote MLD. Especially if you're running a... especially, Sean, if you're running a tutoring commander.
I don't run any tutoring commanders.
No, I know. That's my 2 cents on MLD. Hope it was insightful. Many thanks for the podcast. Keep up the awesome. And that's from Rehan Sheikh. From our Facebook messaging.
That is a well-written and erudite response.
It is, isn't it? It's all of these wonderful responses are making me want to run some MLD now.
Don't. It echoes what we said in the show, but probably didn't talk enough about, which is that you're removing part of Red's sort of strength by removing it, and you're hurting that color a lot.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think it echoes into what we said as well about if your group allows MLD, what you end up doing is ramping up things like Counterspell to counteract the MLD, and the whole meta just becomes more and more competitive. So our meta, I'm talking about our Cockatrice meta. Do you consider that a competitive meta?
I try to keep the game fun while still winning.
Mm.
So I stay away from certain tactics that like Azorius, basically, that don't let your opponents play Magic at all.
Stacks, basically.
Yeah.
Or something that would, say, exile a target permanent, Or just teasing.
No, you have to do that.
Yeah, you got
to
do that.
You have to keep that around.
Yeah, he's trying to have a little dig at Ailey there, but he's failing because Ailey is not anything like a Stackstick.
No, she's not. She's actually a wonderful, wonderful commander. Yeah, you know, I look at it as a way, really, it's just a way to play test decks for me. And I enjoy pulling something weird out, trying something different like I'm doing with Marath right now. But you know what? I think maybe I should playtest some mass land destruction.
I think I agree with Nate in his assessment of our meta. And
yeah,
I think all three of us have built decks that we've taken apart because they just feel too competitive, might be the wrong word, just no fun for people to play against.
Yeah.
And I think that's what comes out. It's not about competitive or not. It's about, do you give a rat's ass about how fun the game is for other people?
That's a very good point.
And I think as people that host a community, because of our position as content creators, which anyone could do, we're not like special because of it, but because we represent our listeners and we generally only play with our listeners, we possibly have a duty to try and make it fun for people.
Yep.
I certainly feel that. It's the same when I used to work for Games Workshop. Like, if someone came in who was a new Warhammer player and said, oh, I want to play one of the staff at Games Workshop, this will be cool. If I just went, ha, here's my tournament army, smash you in the face, go away, little child. Which I could do. That's no fun for anyone. I'm not saying the people we play with, our listeners, are small children coming to learn how to play Magic, but they are coming to take their time to play Magic with us online and looking for a fun game. Me, Mass Land Destruction plays against that, but so do several other strategies like stacks, super heavy counterspell decks. I could probably go for Rahan's stuff here, so Animar, Arkham, and Xur, for example, are commanders that I wouldn't really run because they just are no fun for anyone else.
I look at Nate's Animar deck and as a source of fun. Now, even though it hurts and it wins a lot of games and it's truly oppressive, it's this steamrolling juggernaut that everybody then has to sort of work against in order to defeat it.
But Nate's Animar deck doesn't do what Animar decks can do.
Yeah, that's true.
Nate's Animar deck doesn't say, I have infinite tokens on Animar and put every creature from my deck into play and swing with haste and win.
Well, sort of. It plays like Rakdos.
Yeah, but it could do it.
It has the same deck design principles.
Yeah, it could do it a lot more efficiently, I guess, couldn't it? And you know that.
Yeah, there are some cards that I'm just tired of seeing.
Poor Terastodon.
I've warmed up to Terastodon, you know, after you used him that many times, Phil, to destroy my stuff, but then you died to a stampeding horde of elephants. Because,
oh, that was a sweet dessert, wasn't it?
He may have destroyed all my land, but he's getting trampled to death by elephants because you flew too close to the sun, sir.
Think of it as I gave you guys an opportunity to start at like turn three with a whole bunch of permanents in play.
You went to the zoo, you climbed into the elephant enclosure, you said these aren't so bad, but then you started flicking peanut shells at their scrotums and they turned around and stampeded you. It was brilliant.
Yes, those elephants. I have told that story multiple times since.
Anyway, we should move along. But excellent email, Rahan. Excellent email.
Nate, do you want to take our last email of the show?
So moving from the subject of mass land destruction to lands that your opponents will want to destroy. I'm on EDH Rec doing some research for my Eldrazi tribal deck, and I ran across Vesuva. Comes into play tapped. It's a land. Comes into play tapped as a copy of another land. My question is, can Vesuva copy Dark Depths like Thespian's Stage? The answer is no, not in the way you want. Dark Depths comes into play with the 10 ice counters on it, and Vesuva comes into play as a copy of Dark Depths, so it gets 10 ice counters on it. Thespian Stage is already in play when it does its thing, so it becomes a Dark Depths without any counters on it, which then summons Merit Lage.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the question you should be asking is, and this is a multiple choice, A, are the Eldrazi Titans actually extraplanar manifestations of Merritt Lage's superego? B, are the Eldrazi Titans actually infected by Phyrexian influence?
B.
Or C, both of the above?
A.
No, it's definitely B.
No, the Eldrazi do not have enough purpose to be Phyrexians. Phyrexians have a goal. Eldrazi do not.
Phyrexians will give them the purpose. Why am I arguing for Phyrexian Eldrazi? You demir player.
Mm-hmm.
Good.
Feel your hatred. So who was that from?
That was from Byron at Bugmutter.
Well, we have a lot more email. We'll have to save this for a future one. And it is almost the end of the show, isn't it?
It is.
Yep.
We have a message of the week again. What a surprise.
Oh my God, we have so much more email.
Yeah, I'm serious. We get a ton of messages these days. We would have to do a mailbag, I think, almost every other or every third week in order to keep up.
Well, we're going to do these semi-regularly, probably not that much.
Right.
All right. So it looks like Phil added this message of the week.
I did not. Oh, I was expecting you to carry this. This isn't yours?
The show notes said, add a hateful card, so I put it in.
So I guess Sean added this one. Okay, so Sean, do you want to read this
card? I think we all agree is one of the most hateful cards ever printed. It's called Cultivate. It's 2 and a green for a sorcery. Search your library for up to 2 basic land cards. Reveal those cards and put one of those cards into the battlefield tapped and the other into your hand, then shuffle your library.
Yes.
Does it have a Phyrexian watermark on it?
It doesn't, because if it did, it would be perfectly acceptable and should be in every deck.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'd love if they reprinted Cultivate and Kadama's Reach with Phyrexian watermarks on, because then we could argue Phil shouldn't run them.
Vorin Klex's Poke.
Praetor's Preamble.
Yes, as we all know, Cultivate and basic land fetching is exactly equal to every other kind of tutoring.
It's exactly the same as all creatures, point-to-point creature removal, according to one person who was tweeting at me. So
that's insane.
Just as powerful.
Well, thank you for tuning in, everyone. We thought we'd end it on that wonderful continued discussion of the merits of mana land ramp versus other types of tutoring. If you have any opinions about that, please write to us and let us know. We always love to hear from you, and we appreciate any fuel to either side of that argument. If you want to support the podcast because of all the good things we put inside of your ears, head over to patreon.com/commanderinmtg or just give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. We love each of you, and we're incredibly grateful to everyone who supports us, especially patrons exactly like Lorcan Whitmore.
Bonza!
How should I say that, guys?
All right, you drongos. Lorcan, send me some bloody Tim Tams. He'll laugh, don't worry.
Oh, he absolutely will laugh at that. Ian Masica, or is it Masica, who we met a few minutes ago in the body of the episode here, and Kevin Finnegan, thank you so much. So come play test your decks with us, and if you donate $10 or more per episode, you can come join the Patreon chat we host over on Facebook. Our theme song was created for the podcast by Nate Burgess. How about that? It's a wonderful theme song. Our logo was created for the podcast by Mr. Picto, with assistance from Kelly. And special thanks to Tech Wiz's Jesse Thompson and Graham Frank, and to Justin for his service base. You can reach us by going to our website, commanderinmtg.com. You can leave comments, by the way, folks. You can leave comments on each episode. You can also send us email. Our email is cast@commanderinmtg.com, and that's where maybe a future mailbag email will show up. You can find us on all the social media, I will not name them individually, by searching for Commanderin MTG Podcast, and individually on Twitter, Nate is at Mr. Plorg. I surprised everybody.
Oh my God. I am at Copain 26.
And that's where all complaints should be tweeted.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Phil is at Ketjack.
Oh, no music. and Sean by long-standing tradition.
Well, mate, that's our show.
Hey, Nate, we've never heard you do an Australian accent.
That's right.
I knew that would be your answer.
Mandarin.
Give me a moment here, guys. Lorcan Whitmore, that's what I want to do.
Lorcan's funny.
Yep. Ian Mazica.
I think we should make a running joke on our show of mispronouncing our listeners' names.
It's probably Mazica, isn't it?
It would be Lorcan Whitmore. Ian Mazica.
Just pronounce it a different way each time you say it.
It's even funny. Lurking.
Then you're bound to get it wrong sometime.
Lorcan's whiz visit, isn't it?
Whiz visit, yeah.
Yeah. Me and him were talking about doing a one-off jokey podcast about chocolate biscuits.
Excellent.
Yeah, he's a funny guy.
Yeah, I wonder what he sounds like.
He probably sounds a bit like this. Bonza.
Bonza.
Dude.
Totally.
We should set our Patreoners for these mailbag episodes avatars of, we should ask them before, if they've done an email, what accent they would like whoever's reading them out to give a go at reading their email in.
Okay, back into the outro. 3, 2, 1.